just out of nowhere, there was gunshots.
It's a sniper from up here somewhere.
It's a sniper?
You hear the shot?
Get down.
Get down. Get down. Get down. Get down.
I didn't see anybody else get shot. It was just the cops.
12 officers were shot, 5 killed.
It was just senseless. This has to stop. My son paid the ultimate price.
We're hurting. We are heartbroken.
This is not who we want to be as Americans.
The suspect said he wanted to kill white officers. He said he was upset about the recent police shootings.
He was just getting his license and registration, sir.
It could have been you. It could have been you. It could have been you or you or you. Right
back. Right back. Right back. The system is filled with hate and injustice.
It's basically modern day lynching.
I'm scared. I'm scared for my grandchildren.
We as a country must come together, lock arms, and heal the wounds.
Not just Black Lives Matter, but everybody lives matter.
You can be pro-cop and pro-black.
We are one nation, and we stand together.
There is a problem. We have to accept it, and we have to do better.
We can do better. People of goodwill can do better.
Good evening, I'm Maurice Dubois. One of the most painful weeks in recent memory is coming to an end, the healing just beginning. But President Obama sounded a note of hope today when he said, America is not as divided as some have suggested. Over the next hour, we will look at the 3 straight days of violence and the conversation it has started about easing racial tensions and bringing a nation together. We begin in Dallas, where a peaceful protest against racial injustice Thursday evening was shattered by gunfire. A U.S. Army veteran, angry over the death of black men at the hands of white police officers, opened fire on cops, and when it was over, 5 officers were dead, 7 wounded. Maureen Maher is in Dallas tonight. Maureen.
Maurice, earlier this evening, Dallas police went into high alert when one of their own noticed a suspicious individual walking in a secured area just behind police headquarters. The SWAT team swooped in with their guns drawn. They were unable to find the individual, but that was all in stark contrast to how the day started.
This is News Radio 1080 KRLD.
Back with you, a special edition of the KRLD Morning News this Saturday, July 9th. A lot of unity in the city.
Today, Dallas is trying to move forward.
You want to give him a hug?
Coping with how, in a city doing so much right, things went terribly wrong. I caught up with Mike Rawlings, mayor of Dallas, as he reflected on the past 48 hours.
Yeah, I was nervous. Because early on, we thought there were multiple shooters. Mm-hmm. And to get to the bottom of it, that this was a lone shooter, relieved me a little bit.
Still, the investigation is ongoing. This afternoon, as we watched, a live round of ammunition was discovered just inside the perimeter of the crime scene.
What comes next now for the city? This isn't a city that has a reputation of police issues with the community.
I think the first thing we have to do is we have to mourn correctly. This next week are going to be days of mourning.
You have a lot of funerals coming up.
We do. We have 5 funerals. The president's going to be coming in. Through that mourning process, dialogue starts to happen. And that helps us as a city.
The city has become forever changed. And so it turned everything inside out and upside down.
Malik Aziz is deputy chief of police in Dallas and chair of the National Black Police Association. African-American officers make up a quarter of the city's police force. Dallas has had a well-known community policing program in place since the early 1990s.
I believe Dallas offers a very progressive model for community engagement and community policing.
In what way? What are you doing?
Well, we've had town hall meetings. We open our dialogue. We have open transparency with our community members, even though we can agree to disagree.
It seems almost unfair then, or unfathomable, that Dallas would then be the city that has this specific kind of shooting incident.
There are 800,000 police officers and 18,000 police departments. We're not monolithic. We're not actually the same. We do things very different. Sometimes policing is not pretty. It's ugly, but it shouldn't ever be brutal.
We're here to unite the community. We're all together. What affects one, it affects us all. We want to come to the precinct here and let them know that we're with them.
Let us all bow.
Dallas pastors and police chaplains Karen Holly Thibodeau and David Thibodeau are also among those working to move forward.
We could get a peace walk maybe at 8 a.m. in your park.
Planning a march for peace next weekend.
You want to go into the bar or something?
And they spent today walking the talk, including frank discussions about race.
What do you think about it?
We just need to all come together. That's my opinion. I just see racism among our people, my people, y'all's people.
We have to try to fix the problem and not add to the problem.
And problem solving is on the mayor's mind.
You're put in the spotlight. How do you quell the violence? How do you quell the anger?
I think there's a lot of violent beliefs that have already been quelled by the death of five individuals. Mm-hmm. That makes you sit up and take notice. But I think you've got to also make sure that you listen more.
Late today, that crime scene area, a 15-square block area, was once again expanded after that live round of ammunition was found. The area will remain cordoned off, likely through the start of the funerals later this week. Maurice?
Maureen Maher in front of the still-growing memorial in Dallas tonight. Thank you. The Dallas police are still piecing together exactly how the carnage unfolded. Peter Van Sant takes us through the haunting timeline.
Is that a cop dead?
That's a cop down.
Dude, that's a cop down.
Straight down.
He shot 5-7 times. It's a sniper from up here somewhere.
One of the deadliest and most chaotic nights in Dallas history.
You hear it. He's shooting right now.
Five police officers killed, 7 wounded.
Bring them up.
Topping a racially charged...
I'm not going nowhere!
...violent week in America. It began Tuesday in Baton Rouge. Continued the next day in Minnesota...
And the officer just shot him in his arm.
...streamed live on Facebook.
Oh my God, please don't tell me he's dead.
2 African-American men shot and killed by police officers in less than 2 days. Last Thursday, protests across the country.
Black lives matter! Black lives matter!
In Dallas, it's 7:16 p.m. The demonstration here was peaceful and hopeful. And then, at 8:58 p.m., the slaughter began.
Shots fired. Officer down.
Holy s***.
The drama was witnessed by millions.
I think another officer's down around the corner over here.
Streamed from the kill zone.
They got SWAT over here.
On smartphone.
And then there's somebody else down over there. Holy s***. They're telling me to go. I gotta go.
9:40 p.m.
Move away from this area. This guy's got a rifle.
It becomes clear who the sniper is targeting.
Go! Go!
The shots were directed not at the people involved in the demonstration, but instead targeting the police officers who were watching over those people.
While demonstrators fled, police rushed into the line of fire to aid their fallen brethren. The wounded are rushed to local hospitals.
There's a sort of a war zone going on here.
10:23 p.m., the casualties mounted.
Shots fired, officer down.
Nice, he's gotta go.
4 more police officers were down. A cell phone captures a dramatic showdown between the gunman and a brave police officer who charges him. The officer was killed. The shooter fled. 10:53 p.m. The Dallas Police Department tweets, two snipers shot 10 police officers from elevated position. Three officers are deceased. Two are in surgery and three are in critical condition. Just 20 minutes later, the death toll was raised to four. On the streets, there was still confusion, the fog of war. Police Chief David Brown.
We still don't have a complete comfort level that we have all the suspects.
Police would later learn there was only one killer who had been shooting and moving throughout the night, ending up in this parking garage. Police began tense negotiations that lasted hours.
The suspect that we are negotiating with that has exchanged gunfire with us over the last 45 minutes has told our negotiators that the end is coming. He's gonna hurt and kill more of us, meaning law enforcement.
Not wanting to risk any more lives, police decided on a battlefield tactic never before used on American soil. They sent in a toy truck-styled robot, like this one, with a bomb attached to its arm.
We heard what sounded like a loud boom at this point. We're not sure whether that was a flashbang.
3:06 a.m., about 6 hours after the first shots were fired, the assassin was dead. Police say they had no choice. Tonight, investigators are examining the killer's life, trying to nail down whether anyone else knew of his murderous plan.
He had a choice to come out and we would not harm, or stay in and we would. He picked the latter.
It may have been the last choice Micah Johnson made in this brutal shooting, but Dallas authorities are learning it was far from the only one. After serving in an engineering unit in Afghanistan, in 2015, he left the Army embroiled in allegations of sexual harassment and questions about his mental health. But he had already begun building his own arsenal of guns and explosives.
What we don't know is who, if anybody, may have known what the gunman knew, what he was going to do.
Johnson, 25, lived in Mesquite, Texas, and was active online. He posted a video of dolphins being slaughtered on the Black Panthers of Mississippi Facebook page with this comment, "Why do so many whites, not all, enjoy killing and participating in the death of innocent beings?"
Who was he communicating with on his devices or texting with that should have said, I'm concerned about this guy?
Ron Hosko, a former assistant director of the FBI for criminal investigations, says Johnson's behavior before the attack is telling.
He is on his own. He is out over the edge, ready to detonate.
Before the bomb detonated, he told negotiators he wanted to kill white people, especially police. And another early sign of trouble came in May of 2015 when police took a suspicious person's call and found him sitting in a black Tahoe. He wasn't arrested, but he appeared to have been in a downward spiral after he left the military.
Was that guy trained to kill?
Absolutely.
He was apparently a human time bomb with training and tools to explode. Now investigators are trying to determine exactly what drove him to murder.
Jeff Pegues reporting. Here is what the gunman's hatred took from us. Five brave men who vowed to serve and protect and died doing just that. Officer Brent Thompson was a 43-year-old Marine Corps vet, a transit officer who had just married a fellow officer. He had six grown children from a previous marriage and had recently welcomed a new grandchild. 48-year-old Senior Corporal Lorne Ahrens was also married to a police officer and was the father of two young children, his father, William Ahrens.
He was fearless, but
that same guy would have tea with his daughter.
Sergeant Michael Smith, 55, was known as a cop's cop. He once received 31 stitches protecting his partner from a gang member. A former Army Ranger, he served almost three decades with the police department. Sergeant Smith's wife, Heidi, and his two daughters, 14-year-old Victoria and 9-year-old Caroline, are devastated.
He was leaving to go to work, and I was leaving to go to a movie. And he said to me, "What if this is the last time you ever kissed me or hugged me?"
It just felt different to me. I thought something bad was going to happen.
Officer Michael Kroll, 40, had always wanted to serve others. The Michigan native had started as a jail guard and had moved to Dallas in 2007 to fulfill his dream of becoming a police officer. 32-year-old officer Patrick Zamaripa was a Navy veteran of Iraq. He was proud to serve his country and his community. CBS Evening News anchor Scott Pelley spoke to Patrick's father, Rick Zamaripa.
Patrick was a good boy. If he had a last dollar in his pocket, he'd give it to you.
Worried about his safety, Rick had urged his son to work somewhere else in government, but Patrick was not interested.
What did he say about his police work?
Oh, he loved it. I was trying to get him to join the INS. He was, "No, Dad, I want to stay where I'm at. I want to stay where the action is at." He loved his job.
When Rick saw news of the shooting on TV, he texted his son to make sure he was all right. Patrick always texted right back. But that night, no text came. A family member soon called, telling him to go to Parkland Hospital.
And I asked, "How's Patrick?" And one of his buddies that he graduated with, he wouldn't say, and he started turning around and said, "No."
Officer Zamaripa leaves behind his wife, a stepson, and 2-year-old daughter.
It's just senseless. I wish everybody could just get along. My son paid the ultimate price to take care of people. This has to stop.
And here is the President of the United States. And
capturing and preserving split-second moments of incredible real-life drama, like a president's assassination,
it appears as though something has happened in the motor
was once rare and remarkable, no longer. Today, anyone can be a recorder of history.
And a sniper just started shooting.
Yeah. Virtually every American has a smartphone now. They can actually broadcast high-quality video straight out to the internet.
Wow. Lance Ulanoff is the chief correspondent for Mashable.com, a website that covers the world of social media.
In the case of these police shootings, people are reflexively taking out their phone, whether they're seeing it happen to someone or it's happening to them or someone very close to them.
"We got pulled over for a busted tail light in the back."
On July 7th, Diamond Reynolds pulled out her cell phone during a fatal Minnesota traffic stop, clicked on Facebook Live, and changed the world.
She's kind of a harbinger of the future. People are shocked by her presence of mind. This incredibly dramatic, horrible thing is happening, and she's not just engaging with the police officer, maybe trying to help him. She's actually taking out her phone and saying, "This, please, world, see what's happening right now."
"He just shot his arm off."
Ulanoff says it's only the most dramatic example of video shot by regular people that has transformed the national conversation about police conduct. Beginning with the deaths of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and Eric Garner on Staten Island, New York. These videos propelled the powerful new movement, Black Lives Matter. There are now cell phone applications specifically designed to allow citizens to record interactions with police. Stop and Frisk Watch is offered by the New York Civil Liberties Union, and the ACLU has come up with Mobile Justice.
All the skills that people use in media, these regular people are going to start to use that as well.
And while you used to need something like that, a satellite dish to broadcast live, that's not true anymore. As long as you have a smartphone with all the latest innovations on Facebook, all it takes is just a couple of clicks, and you are live. so anyone who follows me on Facebook can see and hear me. And later, this video could be shared with anyone in the world.
He's licensed to carry. He was trying to get out his ID.
But every eyewitness account has its limitations. As powerful as the Philando Castile video is, we only have one side of the story.
And the officer just shot him in his arm.
I would never say that a single video is going to tell the entire story. And even in the situation of the woman in the car, you know she started to film right after he was shot.
Get the female passenger out!
What's more, Ulanov says, Americans who use social media are suddenly being confronted by scenes they never imagined.
Where's my daughter? You got my daughter?
Face away from me and walk backwards.
People dying. Someone shot and dying right there. That's kind of devastating. And certainly, probably harmful to our psyche.
It's a sniper?
You hear the shot?
Get down.
Get down. Get down.
The sad fact is that while most police interactions do not end tragically, it is the haunting scenes from those that do that stay with us.
People can't look away from it. It's there. It's in their face. And I know that makes a lot of people uncomfortable, but, you know, this is real life.
Keep walking. Keep walking. Get on your knees.
There is no denying the deep divide between law enforcement and communities of color. But what do people from different backgrounds need to understand about each other to really move forward? Michelle Miller has been looking into this.
We know the names. Eric Garner.
I can't breathe.
12-year-old Tamir Rice. And then Michael Brown, a black teenager killed by a white police officer whose death sparked weeks of angry protests in Ferguson, Missouri.
Hands up! Don't shoot!
Brown's death fueled the growth of the movement Black Lives Matter.
I can't breathe! I can't breathe!
It's not about black or white. It's about life or death.
This week, again. Less than 48 hours after Alton Sterling's death, the country watched in horror.
You shot 4 bullets into him, sir.
As Philando Castile's fiance captured his dying moments live on social media.
And the officer just shot him in his arm.
She was a woman on fire.
Terry Williams is the author of Black Pain.
This is not going to be one of those scenarios where a black man is killed and I don't have any way to shape it in any way. Do you know? That was my sense. She was fighting for his life, his spirit.
For many African Americans, the raw reality of watching all of these videos is a tough punch in the gut.
I have had to personally stop watching, you know, because I can't take that in anymore.
At this point, us watching the video is tragedy porn.
Video blogger Lovie Ajayi's post has had more than 100,000 views on social media.
We keep watching the video for what? Just to get used to watching one of us get killed again?
White people need to watch these videos. That's what anti-racism educator Tim Wise believes.
Until we're prepared to look at what often, too often, does happen to black and brown bodies posing no threat to law enforcement, until we are prepared to look at the arc of history that has given us one after another case like this, then I think we're going to continue to pile pain upon pain and never solve the problems.
I watched the video over and over.
In Ohio, police officer Nakia Jones was clearly hurting.
I'm here because I wanted to make a difference. But how dare you stand next to me in the same uniform and murder somebody? How dare you? You ought to be ashamed of yourself. So why don't we just keep it real? If you're that officer that know good and well you got a God complex, you're afraid of people that don't look like you. You have no business in that uniform. Take it off.
No matter how compliant we are with the demands of a police department, it seems that sometimes we end up dead as a result of our interactions with the police.
Michael Eric Dyson says it's personal. Now he's a prominent Georgetown University professor. But as a young man, he had his own painful encounters with police.
Being accosted, being thrown up against a car, being physically assaulted, those are not pleasant memories.
He penned a piece for the New York Times, Death in Black and White.
We're caught between the rage that burns deep within because we are dehumanized. We are not seen as fully human beings by many of our white brothers and sisters and others. On the other hand, we are incapable of making people understand and ultimately acknowledge our humanity.
I just feel like something has to be said.
Tampa pastor Savannah Hartman is trying to do just that.
Somebody has to stand up and say that this is not okay.
Her post went viral.
We can't change the past, but we can change what's ahead. We can change who we are so less people are dead.
But that was far from the thinking of the sniper who killed five police officers. Terry Williams believes Micah Johnson may have felt he had nothing to lose.
There are a myriad of thoughts that must have come through his mind. I don't have any option. I'm a black man in this country, and a bullet could take me down at any second for no reason.
Doesn't justify it.
Definitely doesn't justify it.
When we saw what happened in Dallas, we were among the first voices to say, this is wrong, this is evil, this must not be celebrated. But in the same token, we must also have those police people and others who feel sympathetic to them understand the plight and predicament of black and brown people as well.
But the impact on the next generation remains to be seen.
He had to watch this.
It's okay, I'm right here with you.
I was thinking about that little girl that was in the back seat, that someone needs to talk with her. She needs to be in a room with crayons and paper so that she can draw what she's thinking and feeling. I think it's important for young people to give language to what it is that they experience, and I think we have to encourage that. We have to talk about it.
What do we tell our children?
We as white parents have to take this issue just as seriously as black and brown parents have to. They do it to keep their children alive. We have to do it not only so that those persons of color can enjoy equity and justice, but so that we can have a functioning country in the rest of this century and beyond.
When we come back, celebrities have a powerful platform to influence change.
She has tremendous power, and her voice matters.
In cities across the country today, there were more protests against police shootings. Hundreds attended this one in Chicago. The trouble this week began in Baton Rouge. David Begno reports the healing there is beginning.
Why are we here? Is this important?
In 95-degree heat, 7-year-old Brooklyn stands on a pile of milk crates that her mother stacked to get a better view of an important lesson.
And what was his name?
Alton.
That's right.
Nicole Lee has lived in Baton Rouge her entire life.
It's sad, but it's life. And this is what my job as her mom is.
She is standing here now, all because of Tuesday night, when Alton Sterling's death was caught on camera and went viral. For Nicole, the national outrage became personal.
I just have to do what I feel is going to prepare her mentally for some of the things she's going to have to deal with.
So many people who have protested here have gone out of their way to say there are good police officers.
I want her to understand that there are good people and there are bad people, period, of everything.
Another mother struggling to explain what happened is Quinietta McMillan. Her 15-year-old son, Cameron, is the oldest of Alton Sterling's five children.
He just came to me, and he was just screaming. And he said, Mama, I want my daddy, my daddy.
Did your son see the video before you even knew it existed?
Yes.
Baton Rouge, in spite of the video, which could have led to an explosion of anger, maintain peace thanks to this man.
It may be a time for protests, but there is no time for violence.
Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards.
Today, a criminal investigation is underway. It is being led by the United States Department of Justice.
Just hours after the shooting, Governor Edwards requested that the investigation into Sterling's death be conducted at the federal level, assuring scrutiny with impartial eyes.
I want to single out the faith leaders.
And through a direct appeal to the hearts and souls of this community, Edwards has managed to maintain a mostly calm atmosphere with only a few arrests for minor offenses.
But this is not Ferguson. This is Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Even as Baton Rouge hasn't held back on passion.
If we're going to do this as a people, right, I want y'all to do it right.
Have mercy, God, on our city.
Today, Reverend Gerard Robinson continued answering the governor's call.
We don't always need armor tanks when people are angry. We don't always need riot gear when people are angry. Sometimes people just want to be heard.
Not from behind a pulpit.
Well, I appreciate you being out here, and I really do.
But on the ground, with the people of this shocked city.
There is grief in Minnesota for Philando Castile, who died Wednesday at the hands of an officer. Anna Werner has more on a man who was beloved by many.
Outside the St. Paul School today, where Philando Castile worked, the community remembered the man shot multiple times by a police officer during a traffic stop.
Please, officer, don't tell me that you just did this to him.
As millions watched, Diamond Reynolds streamed the scene live on Facebook as her fiancé lay bleeding. Officer Geronimo Yanez's gun still pointed at him.
I told him not to reach for it. I told him to get his hand out.
You told him to get his ID, sir, and his driver's license. Oh, my God, please don't tell me he's dead.
Yet another black man had been shot by police. And thousands took to the streets in protest all over the country.
I just wanted the people to see that we didn't do this to ourselves. There was no reason for him to be taken the way that he was taken.
But the man who for many became a symbol of police violence was for Diamond Reynolds, her best friend, since she was 17.
I loved how mellow he was. I love how humble he was. And I love, most importantly, how positive he was.
He was also a father figure for Reynolds' 4-year-old daughter, who witnessed everything.
It's okay, I'm right here with you.
What are your fears for her?
My fears for my daughter is growing up thinking that we live in a world where people supposed to be here to protect us will hurt us.
Reynolds' daughter wasn't the only child Castile looked out for. For 14 years, he watched over thousands of children while working in the St. Paul Public Schools. At this Montessori school, where he was a cafeteria supervisor, families remembered him as caring and kind, a man who knew nearly all the kids by name.
Like 9-year-old Harry Lintner.
I liked him. He's a good person.
He came to this protest with his mother, Megan O'Keefe.
It's emotional for me because this hits really close to home. It's a member of our school community. And it's enough is enough.
Another student, 6-year-old AJ.
You liked him.
His mother, Marla Smith, got to know Castile in the school cafeteria.
To watch a friend die over Facebook is too much. And there's no words to explain to a 6-year-old.
Maybe Cecilia Fawcett summed up best what Philando Castile meant to so many.
So what kind of a man do you think he was?
My dad. He was like my dad. Nice and funny. He was pretty awesome.
She said, just like my dad.
He was so loving and nurturing. He was an amazing guy. He was.
Powerful people are feeling a responsibility to use their fame as a platform to bring change. Don Daler has more on that.
With every police-involved shooting of a black American, it seems that more and more celebrities are joining the chorus, shouting, "Don't shoot," celebrities like Russell Simmons.
That's what artists do.
an artist expresses what's on the hearts and the minds of the people. They say things that people don't say. They say things that people are thinking but don't say all the time.
Okay, ladies, now let's get information.
In February, Beyoncé and her dancers took the stage at America's most visible event, the Super Bowl, dressed in costumes reminiscent of Black Panthers.
You just might be a black Bill Gates in the making.
I was incredibly proud of Beyoncé. She has tremendous power, and her voice matters. And so having her do that was giving awareness to a subject that needed to be to have the light shined on it.
This award, this is not for me. This is for the real organizers all over the country.
At this year's BET Awards, Grey's Anatomy actor Jesse L. Williams made headlines with a provocative acceptance speech.
If you have no interest in equal rights for black people, then do not make suggestions to those who do. Sit down.
This week, when two black men were shot and killed at close range by police officers, the chorus of celebrities turned up the heat.
The whole system is guilty!
Just hours before the shootings in Dallas, Beyoncé posted this letter on her website homepage that reads in part, "We must use our voices to contact the politicians and legislators in our districts and demand social and judicial changes." In New York, Spike Lee was peacefully marching alongside concerned citizens. And at a shoot with Entertainment Tonight, Nick Cannon said this.
I know we're all upset about a lot of things that are going on. And to me, instead of getting out and just talking about it, I'm really trying to do it.
Then this happened in Dallas. Nick Cannon quickly jumped onto Instagram, posted this photo, and called for peace with this quote from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., "An eye for an eye leaves everyone blind." John Legend tweeted, "Being against cops killing is not equal to being for killing cops. We need peace in our streets."
Just don't go late.
Friday morning, Jay-Z released this song.
I am not poison, no, I am not poison, just a boy from the hood that... got my hands in the air in despair, don't shoot, I just want to do good.
And today, Beyoncé posted a tribute on Instagram to the five officers killed in Dallas, asking for peace and saying, "We must be the solution."
You can't match hate with hate.
While rapper Snoop Dogg spoke out at a press conference in Los Angeles, alongside fellow rapper The Game, LAPD Chief Charlie Beck, and Mayor Eric Garcetti.
You got to match hate with love, and that's what we came for today in a love offering, to sit down and have some dialogue.
There's so much work to do, and I think that we all know we do need to change the system. These are the moments where we have to seize the opportunity to change it. None of these people have to die in vain.
Police departments all over America have been beefing up security for their officers since the attack in Dallas. In New York, Chicago, Seattle, and Portland, they're patrolling in pairs, at least temporarily. Many departments are looking for long-term solutions to improving relations with communities of color. Mark Strassman is in Miami.
This is Overtown, 1 square mile in Miami of grinding poverty and crime. Its residents, mostly black, so distrust police that they'll call them only when it's time to pick up a body.
When you get a call in Overtown, you come prepared.
Overtown is Officer Malcolm Moyes' beat, a tough place for a cop to build trust.
So let me ask you something. What's your attitude toward cops today?
Today, really, I just try to keep my distance. Yeah.
Moyes grew up in this neighborhood. He has spent the last 2 years trying to change Overtown stereotypes about cops.
Yeah.
Moyes will tell you the key is getting out of his cruiser and talking to people.
And the bottom line is, you're not going to have a problem with me because I'm going to treat you with respect, and in return, I always get respect back.
Distrust of cops here goes back years, with reason, according to the Department of Justice. In 2013, the DOJ issued a scathing review. Miami police had a pattern or practice of excessive force and tactical and training deficiencies.
You know, you can't change a culture in 6 months. It takes a long time. Some people cannot change that easily.
Rodolfo Yanez is the chief and chief reformer of the Miami Police.
I do solemnly swear.
I solemnly swear.
When Chief Yanez swore in 25 new officers on Friday, he stressed the department's new approach, community-oriented policing.
Every contact that you have with somebody that you serve, strive to make it a positive one.
We can anticipate that there will be an ugly moment. And if we don't have a relationship before that, if you try to build them after, you're way behind the eight ball.
You know, I wasn't that perfect A student.
Miami cops started meeting with local teens in a program called Talk It Through.
How many of you trust police officers? Raise your hands.
Not one hand went in the air.
We look at y'all kids, and we have a certain love, a natural love for you all. We have a natural love. And that's why we do what we do. That's why we risk our lives and come out here to protect y'all, because we're going to make sure that y'all go home safe.
Tornadoes!
Snap!
Everybody give me 10 push-ups.
Moy started a track and field team for Overtown kids from 3 to 18.
Everybody go back over there.
95% of them live below the poverty line.
All right, you finally got your uniform.
Still, some residents resent anyone in blue. Lieutenant Joshua De La Malera knows a cop's race can feed distrust.
That doesn't mean anything, because those very same people who might not like me because I'm white and this and that, I'm the avenging angel when it all goes down.
Miami's trying other new ways to protect communities and cops.
Put your hands up, put your hands up.
Where's my brother?
Like these cops in Las Vegas, Miami cops now get trained in alternatives to deadly force. Police shootings in Vegas dropped from 25 in 2010 to 16 last year.
You can do all of the things that you need to do, but in the end, it's going to be a behavioral reaction between two human beings. What that evolves to is impossible to predict.
This week is not the first week America had its heart broken in Dallas, Texas. Dealey Plaza sits silent, still trying to make sense of that senseless day in 1963, when one bitter man with a rifle changed history.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Now, Dallas has a new monument to the fallen. Fresh markers of murder and emotions still so raw. Here by El Centro College, another troubled former soldier brought his anger and his rifle and systematically gunned down the very people sworn to keep all of us safe.
It's a sniper from up here somewhere.
It is the coward's creed, this cold-blooded murder of the innocent. And all too often, its legacy is based in race. From the Birmingham church basement, where four little girls died in 1963.
Work it together in Jesus' name.
To the pews of Charleston, where in 2015, 9 African Americans were slaughtered at prayer.
Treason! Oh!
To the streets of New York, where in 2014, officers Wen Jen Liu and Rafael Ramos were ambushed and murdered. And now, from the boulevards of Baton Rouge to the streets of St. Paul, the wounds of racial hatred shadow us through the mounting decades of violence. Today, the pressing questions of yesterday reverberate with meaning. When will the deadly confrontations like these ever stop?
I know you're asking today, how long will it take? How long? Not long.
Yes, sir.
Because no lie can live forever.
Yes, sir.
And now, everywhere, we are refusing to let a killer define what this country is all about. Treat everyone the same, came the powerful chorus of American voices.
There is sorrow, there is anger, there is confusion about next steps, but there's unity in recognizing that this is not how we want our communities to operate. And that serves as the basis for us being able to move forward.
This week in Dallas, where five brave police officers died at the hands of a coward, Americans joined arms.
And one of the things that gives me hope this week is actually seeing how the overwhelming majority of Americans have reacted with empathy and understanding.
Calls for a new commitment to bringing a nation together. There will be much more tomorrow on Sunday Morning and Face the Nation and on our digital news service, CBSN. I'm Maurice Dubois. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Good night.
Paramount Plus is your streaming home for the NFL on CBS every Sunday.
Touchdown!
With the most anticipated games and football's biggest stars.
Oh, what a catch!
Sign up for Paramount Plus today.
See you Sunday!